Welcome to the Analytics Dynasty Daily Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan McNamara, and I wanted to bring this back to a piece we worked on earlier in the offseason, I guess last offseason and over the summer, talking about how, the questions basically that we were watching. And I think I might have done, I think I wrote something on it for Football Guys over the summer. I know I did a podcast for it as well. It's probably like June or so. So here are the things that basically the 16 stories. So I'm going to do the AFC in this edition. We'll do the NFC and we'll sort of look through where they are. I think there's some interesting things that when we look back on, I think it's fun to see some of the discussions that we had and maybe how we should reevaluate where we are. And, are we asking the right questions? And, what type of progress are we seeing on them? So I think it's important. Okay, so this was clearly pre-mega deal again. I think this was June or July that I released this. I know that was when an article went out on Football Guys semi-related to this. And then I think I did a podcast maybe a couple weeks before that, that I decided to write something in an expanded form for Football Guys on this topic. So we're talking like June last year. When will Josh Allen sign his mega deal? Well, Josh Allen ended up signing a six-year, $258 million contract extension, had $150 million guaranteed, so really good there. The contract ends up putting him in a Bills uniform basically through his age 32 season. 2025 kind of becomes a, hey, you could cut him if you wanted to, or you could, you're probably going to want to restructure then. There's a huge cap hit at that point. So, and that becomes when some of the dead money is outweighed by the cap savings. So that would be a natural point, and that's when the guaranteed money is. So that would probably be a natural point where you see an extension or some movement on that contract. Again, I'm hoping it's another mega extension that he sort of plays up to it. So, and again, on the back of a two quarterback one seasons, I think you're in a really good track. So, good for Josh Allen, good arc for him, and I think he deserves to be in the top three or four at the quarterback position for sure. What will the Jets passing game look like? And that was I really had no idea sort of what it would look like in terms of Corey Davis. Elijah Moore was, a popular offseason buzz candidate. We didn't know what Zach Wilson would look like. 20th in passing yards, 208.3 passing yards per game. Corey Davis ended up missing eight games. Elijah Moore led them in targets with 77 and yards with 538. It's not a great number in terms of your team leading reception, yardage is less than 550. That's not what you want. You did get a late season breakout out of Braxton Berrios. It's actually Jamison Crowder that leads them in receptions with 51, and he's scheduled to be a free agent this year. So, we talked about this in the offseason. I think it's a good example. Should you have had Braxton Berrios in there running more routes while Crowder, instead of Crowder, had just cut Crowder? When is Crowder going to be on the next competitive team for the Jets? He probably wasn't going to be. And so you get to see some opportunity with Berrios for a variety of other reasons, some other injuries to Davis and the like. Maybe that would have been better off for them to do in the offseason. They would have, earlier in the season and sort of given him that role and just see what he could do with it. Maybe they're further ahead now in the development of Berrios and Moore and these other young guys than they would have been if they had just rolled out Crowder. Denzel Mims only played in 11 games, finishing 10th in targets on the team, and it's a firm bus track for him. So he's a guy that I liked in terms of some of the metric stuff coming out, but we liked him in the context of being a second round pick. And there's a pretty hysterical history of second round picks going to the Jets, so we'll have to dig up that archive, but hasn't been a successful trend for them in over the past decade or so. Is Tua the answer for the Miami Dolphins at quarterback? It's interesting. Some of these, there's clear answers. Some of them, there's not. This is one I think there's not. I'm recording this soon after Brian Flores was fired. And I think, the Mike Zimmer thing And Kellen Mond, we'll talk about Kellen Mond in the other episode. That was one of the questions I had about Minnesota. The Mike Zimmer thing saying, you know, I don't need to see Kellen Mond and see him every day in practice. I don't need to see him in a game. We underappreciate that. Right? We underappreciate how much we know. Or I guess overappreciate, you know, our knowledge, because we look at coaches and say, well, why wouldn't you just play this guy? Why wouldn't you do that? Well, the coach has access to Kellen Mond. Like, Brian Flores had access to Tua. He probably knew. One of the projects that I want to work on this offseason is, and I just like to ask a lot of people, maybe, you know, some people of different backgrounds and different you know, experiences, but how much of a difference would it make, you know, in terms of if you just take random subsets of people, right? If you just say, you know, hey, this person's going to, you know, it's everything's the same, their work ethic's the same, but we're just going to adjust their speed. Or all their physical traits are the same, but this person is going to study and work 80 hours a week versus this person's going to work 40 versus another version's going to work 20. What do those differences look like? Right, this person's going to be on a vegan diet versus this person's going to be on a vegan diet. Right, you just have different, you know, these different things that we sort of look at. We don't necessarily know. Right, this person's going to do a lot of sleep tracking and be really good at it versus this person's not. What impacts would those sorts of things happen or have? You know, and I think that there's different things that Miami probably knows about Tua that give them skepticism, right? And I think that that's probably one of the reasons why Brian Flores is gone, right? Maybe he was probably the one that had some of the skepticism. And if you believe, you know, early on into his career and some of the ways his arc was handled, right, there's reasons to think that the coaching staff was probably a little bit more bearish on him than the front office was. So I think when you look at all those things, like, there's a lot of information there that it isn't entirely clear. The other thing I would say about Brian Flores is it's not entirely clear. You know, there's people that want to give him knighthood, right, and that want to crown him. I'll just say he kept running out of people out of town, right? He went through, three offensive coordinators in the time that he was there. He had dual offensive coordinators last year. You know, some unorthodox things that didn't work, and you question some of the management style. So I, you know, and that's something we'd said last season, right? And that's something that I think, you know, people wanted to, love what Miami was doing, and I sort of agree with some of their tracks, but I think there's a lot of reason to be skeptical of Tua at this particular point. And you know, 26th in total points, 27th in points per game from a fantasy perspective. He's just over expectation in terms of passing numbers, passing completion percentage as well. So that is you know, it's a firm incomplete there for Tua. Will Mac Jones start for the New England Patriots? You remember one of the things that we talked about in the offseason that I specifically like mentioned and I know thought a lot about was, hey, if Mac Jones is the starting quarterback for the New England Patriots, we're probably in a situation where there's going to be a lot more running back production. It's going to be Damian Harris. It's going to be you know, who we didn't necessarily know if it was going to be Sony Michel. You know, we figured Damian Harris, Sony Michel, ends up, you know, Ramondre Stevenson as well. You know, they all become, you know, that situation sorts itself out where it's Harris and then it's Stevenson. And you just see a totally different offense in the running game. They lead the league in quarterback rushing touchdowns, right? So I think they might have had one receiver touchdown, like an end around or something like that. But you're not dependent on Cam in the way that they were. Right? You're basically second lowest in terms of quarterback run rate in the red zone, less than 5% of the time. Damian Harris scores 15 rushing touchdowns, tied for second most in the league, and finishing top 20 in terms of scoring on the season. So I think this is going to be one of those ones where if we can get that situation right. And again, it might be cheap. And I think that's an interesting thing as well. Like, it might be cheap because people question some of the upside of it with the lack of receiving. You know, we'll see how that ultimately boils out. Maybe Harris just isn't a good receiver. You know, we don't know that. But I do think that it's going to be a good source of production, especially with the fact that we don't have a running back competing at the goal line against a quarterback. Well, Baker Mayfield signed an extension with the Browns. He didn't, and now we're in a firm holding pattern. I can't imagine that they're going to lock him up in this offseason for guaranteed money. I mean, as I can't imagine that teams and that presidents of teams and owners of teams are going to look at the Carson Wentz experience. They're going to look at the Jared Goff experience and be like, yeah, you know what? I want to do that. Maybe they do. You know, maybe that's not how they're thinking. Maybe they're overestimating. I mean, we've seen a lot of that as well in terms of even our own evaluations. Like, we overestimate how good our guys are. I can't imagine that you're going to get in with a ton of guaranteed money on Mayfield. You know, maybe it's something like this year and next year you're guaranteeing a third year. You know, you're doing something along the lines that look a lot like the franchise tags. Maybe that's something that would be an extension. But other than that, like, I got a hard time seeing why they would do that. I would just expect him to play out the fifth-year option. And, you know, he's coming off injuries and all that stuff. Just play out the fifth-year option and see where we get. He's basically been good every other year. And so he was down this year, and we'll see where he is at next year. My big one for Cincinnati was, is Joe Burrow healthy? He tore his ACL last season. He returned, finishing the top 12 of scoring and leading the league in yards per attempt. He actually has reset the franchise, fueling two top 24 wide receivers, including T. Higgins, who finished with wide receiver 24 finish, and Jamar Chase at wide receiver 5. So good on Burrow. I think he's a regression candidate next year outside of his volume going up. We'll see where that goes. You know, maybe it falls somewhere in between this year and last year, and it's a little bit more balanced. But there's some efficiencies there that I just don't think are going to keep up. So we'll be watching that. I think he's good, but I'm fading like a top 6 price at the position. What will the Pittsburgh offense look like? This is one that I wasn't really I didn't have a great sense of. Wide receivers tend to look more like Chase Claypool than Deontay Johnson, I think, in our mind's eye. But Deontay Johnson's a better wide receiver than Chase Claypool is. And one of the things that we talked about last year was, you know, Chase Claypool was producing in non-repeatable ways. As a rusher, doing some gadget stuff, wasn't a true outside wide receiver. And the way that he was scoring really well as a rookie. You then get to a point with him where you come into the season and there's limitations for Ben. Maybe Deontay Johnson just fits Ben better at this point. But Claypool wasn't that productive in college either. So that's a trend that tends to show up a little bit more and more. And, you know, you sort of look at it through that lens and the fact that you see when Claypool was actually productive as a rookie, it was in kind of fluky ways. Rushing, I think he had like 2 or 3 rushing touchdowns that really bumped up his valuation. You sort of look like that, and there's some questions there. Freiermuth steps forward. You know, we'll see with Najee Harris what he looks like ultimately. But I'm really intrigued here by Deontay Johnson, especially going forward. I think Najee Harris should be a top 3 to 4 player at the running back position almost for certain this offseason. When will Lamar Jackson sign an extension? He hasn't yet, and we didn't see an extension. We saw basically the worst season of his career. So a jump in passing yards per game to the highest in his career at 240.2, which you could say, all right, that's a pretty good thing. However, worst quarterback rating, worst QBR, worst adjusted yards per attempt in any of the 3 years he's been a starter. He's missed 5 games. It's really the first extended absence during his career, so we can sort of forgive some of that. He was 15th in terms of season-long points, 7th in terms of points per game. And again, maybe they do a version of that Baker Mayfield thing that we were talking about. You know, that's the question I would have. What are they going to do with him? And I think that's something that's going to linger over our head. He needs to be a better passer, and he didn't take that step forward this year. So that's definitely a concern. All right, Houston, what is the status of Deshaun Watson? I'll say this. David Culley, they want to fire David Culley. If Houston fires David Culley, like, I don't even know if David Culley's good. I couldn't even – the amount of time that I watched Houston this year is minimal at best. Like, that's a to say I minimally watched Houston is be a generous statement. You know, obviously went through their stats every week, but they could, they didn't appear to be super dysfunctional. They just didn't appear to be super good. I don't know what you could have expected out of them. You lose your starting quarterback, you hire a guy who, you know, I don't think was like an A-list guy. Probably wasn't even a B-list guy, for being totally honest and totally fair to him. Right? I think he's in his 60s and never had a starting, job as a head coach before, which is, you could say in one respect is like, hey, there's like, that's kind of a sign like maybe he didn't deserve it. There's other things, especially with the way that he came up, some special teams angles to, you know, his resume, that you might say, hey, listen, like, those guys just don't get jobs, right? I think we're really bad at evaluating head coaches when they're hired. You know, I know Joe Judge early on, people were really excited about, he just got fired, right? Like, we don't know necessarily what goes on behind the scenes. Like, I think there's a lot of reasons to be skeptical of how Brian Flores behaves when the cameras aren't shining on him. And that is confirmed a little bit by the way that this happened this week. I think, and this is probably a lesson for the fact that we're going to see some of these movements now, and, you know, people say, oh, look, the situation's really good. Like, we don't know that. But I think a lot of times, and I've seen this especially with bosses, I'm sure you have as well, sometimes the best bosses aren't the guys that are particularly good at the underlying skill, right? So, you know, Michael Jordan makes a shitty coach, right? Why? Because shooting a jump shot comes really easy to him, right? All that stuff. It's really hard to teach that. You know, in my job, prosecutors make really terrible bosses because it's their way or the highway typically. And that's not really what a boss is, right? Your boss, you shouldn't, a good boss shouldn't really treat people like that. It's a totally different skill. So it's interesting. Like, I don't know what, I couldn't tell you what David Culley's management style is, but the fact that they want to fire him, I don't know what they reasonably could have expected other than to pick in the top, wherever they are, top six or whatever of the draft, to be one of the worst teams in the league. Like, they actually overperformed, I think, a lot of people's expectations. So we'll watch that. We'll see where Watson leads. Again, I have quarterback tiers coming out when I sort of talk about him more in depth there, but I think he's a still an elite quarterback, and it's really a question of when he plays. So which Carson Wentz will we see in 2021? The steep decline Carson Wentz second half of the season. You could look at his season and say 27 touchdowns, 7 interceptions. Wow, it's actually good. 6.9 yards per attempt. That ranked 20th in the league. Ah, negative 2.3 completion percentage over expectation. Ah. You know, it got worse too as the season went along. Like, you could see their EPA drop per play. There was a graph that I saw from someone from PFF. They just did basically a per play, EPA, and it, theirs just kind of fell through the floor at the end of the season. And, you know, in terms of their passing game, so big time disappointment for that. I mean, I think it's interesting. Like, if you're Indy, how do you make quarterback better? You know, I talked in a prior episode about, like, just fix the damn problem. But I think that it's tougher to do that. You know, I would say, like, I don't know if Stafford's the right answer for the Rams, right? I don't know if ultimately he gets them where they belong, but I think that's the type of shot, like, you kind of want to take instead of, you know, taking the, you know, you trade the mid first for a guy like Wentz. I thought Wentz was already gone as it was. So maybe I'm biased in terms of that, but I think they represent multiple different ways to try and fix a problem that I think are really interesting to study. I'd probably lean in there. Let's just do something more aggressive and get it done type situation. You know, if I have questions about the quarterback situation, I'm not going to probably win a Super Bowl. It's probably not what's going to happen. I mean, it's possible, but probably not. And I think whatever the difference between Wentz and Stafford was in cost, like, that's probably how much more confident they felt that he could do that. So interesting there. How will the Tennessee offense look in the post-Arthur Smith era? Injured. A.J. Brown, Julio Jones, Derrick Henry all spent time on IR. We were really hopeful for Anthony Firkser. That didn't happen. Ryan Tannehill had one of the worst supporting casts in the league when you take out A.J. Brown, Julio Jones, and Derrick Henry. He still managed quarterback 13 finish despite the limitations. They were fourth lowest design pass rate in the league at 52.6%. All that's to say, I think Tannehill's actually pretty good. I think it's probably an example of that it didn't necessarily, the loss of Arthur Smith didn't really cost them a ton. So so good performance there for Ryan Tannehill in a what I think is an otherwise pretty difficult situation. Hands down, failure in Jacksonville with Urban Meyer. Started to get a grasp on the NFL game, and it's just their offense just ground to a halt. I think he's going to hand off Trevor Lawrence to the next the next coach, and it's going to be a really interesting situation because you're going to get Trevor Lawrence with some of the scar tissue from this year and all the stuff that happened, but you're going to see a quarterback and I imagine there's still a lot of people that want that job because they see sort of the good in him. You know, I'll be interested to look at some of the adjusted stuff after the first year, sort of how we should contextualize that. You know, listen, I tend to think if you're going to be great, you're going to be great. You're not necessarily held back by situation. You know, I think we over make excuses, especially at a position where it should be like, okay, trust but verify, right? And that's absolutely the way you should treat the quarterback position. You should verify it before you make a big investment. I think that with Trevor Lawrence, that's really how I'm going to feel with this one. So, you lost Travis Etienne for the year. He should be back in 2022. Probably is going to beat James Robinson back. He suffered a season-ending Achilles injury, and so we'll see what happens there. Trevor Lawrence, more interceptions, 17 than touchdowns. Not great there in terms of his performance on the season. But again, I kind of put that a little bit on him and not just on their Mr. McFeely there, their head coach. Can Clyde Edwards-Helaire take a step forward in the Kansas City offense? He disappointed. And yeah, I put out on Twitter this week, and I'm working on a project for some running back stuff, and I just said, you know, what's the – I just wanted to see some of the stats. And so I was just like sort of rumbling through it. I was like, man, there's a lot more receptions for Josh Jacobs than Antonio Gibson. And so I put out like, you know, what basically if you pick the two of them, who would you take? And I figured Gibson would win. And then there was comments like people like, oh, I'm so disappointed in Josh Jacobs as being like the 101 that class. What a disappointment. I was like, you got two top 12 seasonal finishes. And the next year you drafted Clyde Edwards-Helaire at one. Like we forget, like we, like would I have rather had Christian McCaffrey? Of course, but like what? I don't know what more you want other than like, you get a starter season as a rookie. You get two top 12 finishes in a row. We're 3 years into a rookie deal and he's got three hits, right? Yeah, I mean, like contextualize that Josh Jacobs deal against Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Clyde Edwards-Helaire finishes running back 44 in 10 games. He averaged 12.2 points per game. That's good for 29th at the position. He's getting outplayed by Darrell Williams. On a per-game basis, Edwards-Helaire averaged 51.7 points per game. Again, that's only 10 games. And Darrell Williams had twice the production, the receiving production that – than Edwards-Helaire. So when you look at all that, it's a really interesting, and that's on a per game basis too. So that receiving production, it's scary, the Clyde Edwards-Helaire angle. Do I treat him like he's in a multi-year window? Probably not. That's really the thing with him. Like I probably don't trust that a ton. I'm stashing my Darrell Williams shares. I mean, it'll be interesting to see where Clyde Edwards-Helaire falls in cost. Because, like, if he's going to be available outside the top 20, like, I think he should be scooping up those shares. But if he's going to be in the teens, like, there's going to be a lot of other options that I think are there. And even in the early 20s, there might be options there that I think could make a bigger difference. Like, you know, I should want to bet Clyde Edwards-Helaire over A.J. Dillon. But at the same time, I don't know, with what we know so far in his career, I don't know if Clyde Edwards-Helaire sort of has enough in his arsenal to sort of make a big difference, where we kind of know that A.J. Dillon can, right? And again, I think that's a really interesting comp. So, and when you just look at contextual prices, right, just remember, like, if you can hit three doubles from 101, like, you're well ahead, right? You're on track for a batting championship. And you, all you need is Clyde Edwards-Helaire to show you that. Who's the starting quarterback for the Broncos? Well, and heading into 2022, I hope it's not any of the guys that started for him this year. That's Bridgewater and Locke. 14 games for Bridgewater. He threw for 218 yards per game and 18 touchdowns total. That's not going to win much of anything. Locke started the final three games of the season, averaging 187 passing yards per game while only throwing one touchdown. They ranked 19th in passing yards on the season. And seem like a team that could really compete if they have another quarterback option that's better than either Teddy Bridgewater or Drew Locke. What is the role of Kenny Drake in the Vegas offense? That was a big question in terms of capping Jacobs' upside. Jacobs went on to finished fifth at the position in receptions, a running back 12 finish despite a career worst in rushing yards at 872. Drake's guaranteed basically to be back in 2022 contractually. They could save $2.5 million cutting him, but he's guaranteed $5.5 million in actual salary. So we'll see sort of how that works out. But yeah, I mean, I think Jacobs has a little bit of that Fournette in him that, hey, listen, in different years we've seen it. Like, different years we've seen, all right, he can rush and ring, you know, up 15-plus touchdowns, and then in a different year, like, there's a lot of reasons that he disappoints in that aspect. Not entirely his fault. Some of them probably his fault. But ultimately, he goes and performs really well on a receiving basis. So, again, he has multiple outs. I think that's a really interesting profile when you ultimately look at it. All right, last for this AFC edition of this podcast. In July, I actually wrote, if healthy, Eckler has running back one overall finish in his range of outcomes. He missed a running back one finish in points per game with 21.6 behind Jonathan Taylor's 22.2. So 0.6 points per game difference there. Eckler played one less game than Taylor did, so we didn't really sniff him in total points per game. But when you look at his per game or total points for the season, he didn't really sniff him. But in terms of points per game, you know, on a adjusted for how many games they played, really close. And I think that's this is his second top four seasonal finish. He's behind only Najee Harris in reception total. He's up there as amongst the league leaders in receptions per game as well. So really interesting there for Eckler. I think he's he's one contractually I'm really interested in what happens because I think he's probably due for some money. And we'll see sort of what they do with him. He's probably the best running back contract that a team has signed in maybe the last decade. It might even be more than that. Like, his contract has been really, really good. They signed him for, I think it was 4 years, $24 million, and he's definitely earned that and probably been one of the only guys that's actually done that at the running back position in recent years. All right, well, that'll do it for your 16 questions from the AFC. Until next time, continue embracing the variance, and we will talk again very soon.